The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Rewind the dynamite from the most recent sight. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And we are live, folks. It's John Pollock. It's Andrew Thompson. And it is time for Rewind a Dynamite. Andrew, welcome back to the show. It's been too long that you and I have done one of these. And we are coming off a man nearly being lit on fire. And here we are. And speaking of fire, look at that shirt that Andrew is wearing here, representing the Pillars themselves. A very rare shirt, actually.
Very rare shirt.
Andrew. It's great to chat with you.
It's good to see you, man. I think the last time we did a podcast together, I think it was the SmackDown Madison Square Garden 2023. I think it was in the Bloodline segment when like 10 minutes or 20 minutes over or something like that. So it's good to be back on the podcast, man.
It's good to be here. We have lots to discuss tonight from tonight's Blood and Guts edition of the show. And I do want to make mention right off the top, Andrew, coming off a cool 5 hour and 8 minute show on Sunday night with the NWA podcast, some of their finest work with Two-Way Ray, Chris from LA, and Uncle Nate as well. Battling injury as he gutted his way through the NWA podcast, but a great show on Sunday for those that are have not listened or making their way through it. It's a great discussion on what's going on in the American political scene, which seems like it's wall to wall coverage down there, Andrew.
Yeah, man, that was a very insightful conversation with Chris, Nate, Ray, and myself. And of course, shout out to Uncle Nate, man. He battled through a back injury, made it a whole 2 hours, but he had to tap out at the end, which I very much understand. But definitely grateful to Ray and Chris just for the open forum and discussion, man. And it was a great conversation. I hope people will check it out for sure.
Well, that is up on the site, and want to give mention that coming up later this week, we've got multiple shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe over the next few days. Waiting will be making his return on Thursday with WH Park and Rich Fan chatting about Deadpool 2 in advance of Deadpool and Wolverine, which is going to be hitting theaters over the next 24 hours. And then he will also be with me for Rewind to SmackDown. We've got our G1 shows. And I want to start there, Andrew. How much is G1 on your radar this season? It feels like each year, I think it's harder and harder for people to make the time for G1. But where's your interest level this year in G1? Have you gotten to see any of the shows yet?
So I've like picked and choose like which matches I wanted to see based off of like the hype around it on social media, or what I think would gauge like my personal interest. And like I really like the Kesha Jeff Cobb match. I saw Gabe Kidd versus Shota. Of course, I saw Shingo versus Naito, and I heard about the Naito Jake Lee match, and apparently that wasn't the best. So no. I definitely won't be going to check that out. But yeah, I saw Zach is leading the standings in his block. So yeah, man, it's I'm trying to like find my way through it, pick out what I like while also, you know, trying to keep on top of the news and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I don't want to pat myself too much on my back, but in the G1 contest, perfect day of picks on Tuesday. So I just want to say, me and John Cena, we have toppled AI at least so far into the G1. But yes, the shows will be continuing on Thursday. It's a B block event, and thus far, as we are 3 days into the tournament, it is Zack Sabre Jr. and Evil on top of the A block with 6 points apiece, and then over on the B block side, Hanare, Yuya Uemura, and Konosuke Takeshita, all with 2-0 records and 4 points each. And I think that Thursday's card should have a pretty fantastic match with Takeshita and Yuya Uemura. They're the headliner on Thursday. So that should be, very strong that I'm looking forward to myself. And I'll be doing a show with Eric Marcotte Thursday as we go over all of that. Yeah. Hanare against David Finlay as well rounds out the card with El Fantasmo Yotasuji, Jeff Cobb against Ren Narita, and Hirooki Goto against Oleg Bolton in the tournament matches.
Who are your early pick to win this year's G1? If you just had to guess off the top of your head,
I think that Yotasuji has a real shot at it this year. I think Zack Sabre Jr. is probably going to go pretty far. I could see him going. I mean, some people might see Zack Sabre Jr. as the favorite to win the entire thing. What I like about this year's tournament is that I think there's a few avenues you can go to, but I think one of those kind of rising stars, like whether it be a Shota Umino, a Yotasuji, a Yuya Uemura, I really hope that any, if not all of those guys come out of this G1 sort of in that higher placement for New Japan. That's what I think the key to this year's tournament is.
Yeah, if I had to like just guess, I think it would be Tsuji number one for me, Zach number two, and then Shingo number three to win this year's G1. Because Tsuji, because Gato, I like grown to see that he likes these like long term stories, and I think it was at Sakura Genesis when Naito beat Tsuji to retain the IWGP title, so I can see them like panning this long thing out to him eventually getting another title shot and beating Naito. And then I can see Zach too, like Zach. So for him to essentially just uproot his life into Japan and then fully commit to New Japan, like I think at some point you got to reward him. I think he won the New Japan Cup like two times already and lost both title matches and probably lost other world title matches as well. Like at some point, like you got to get this dude something, like for the sheer commitment over the years. And yeah, that's why it's either one of those two. I can see Shingo winning, honestly.
We're going to talk a bit about the NBA, Andrew, and what's going on. It's the battle of press releases today. Yes. Because earlier this week, Warner Brothers Discovery announced that they had formally issued their matching offer for the Amazon package. So the NBA came back today with a statement stating that the NBA today, they stated that Warner Brothers Discovery's most recent proposal did not match the terms of Amazon Prime Video's offer, and therefore, we have entered into a long-term arrangement with Amazon. Throughout these negotiations, our primary objective has been to maximize the reach and accessibility of our games for our fans. Yeah, nothing in there about maximizing how much money we're going to get out of this. That's also a key to this. Our new arrangement with Amazon supports this goal by complementing the broadcast, cable, and streaming packages that are already part of our new Disney and NBC Universal arrangements. All three partners have also committed substantial resources. There's the operative word, substantial resources, to promote the league and enhance the fan experience. We're grateful to Turner Sports for its award-winning coverage of the NBA and look forward to another season of the NBA on TNT. Basically, we still got to go to prom, but we're breaking up, is what the NBA is stating. So the disgruntled ex responded very, very quick. And this came from TNT Sports. We have matched the Amazon offer as we have a contractual right to do and do not believe the NBA can reject it. In doing so, they are rejecting the many fans who continue to show their unwavering support for our best-in-class coverage delivered through the full combined reach of WBD's video-first distribution platforms, including TNT, home to our four-decade partnership with the league, and Max, our leading streaming service. We think they have grossly misinterpreted our contractual rights with respect to the 25-26 season and beyond, and we will take appropriate action. We look forward, however, to another great season of the NBA on TNT. And Max, including our iconic Inside the NBA. Man, those are fighting words, Andrew, and it looks like we are going to get a legal showdown, but they both are in agreement that they look forward to this upcoming season where they have to work together. But this is not going to end well, is it?
Yeah,
especially for Warner Brothers Discovery, in my opinion.
I said the only thing I could sum up, I was like, sounds very legal. Like, this just sounds like something's going to get very, like, dragged out over the, like,
that should be a segment. Sounds very legal.
Sounds very legal, man. Like, you want to know what? Cause I had saw, like, I think an hour or so before Dynamite started, I had saw a report from, I think one of the NBA reporters, and it was like, that Amazon is interested in, bringing the NCAA, the NBA crew over to Amazon. And I don't know exactly how like that is going to happen, because I just can't see Ernie Johnson dipping out on Turner, because he's like deeply entrenched within that company and has been.
He seems the one that is most.
He seems like he's staying put, but I can see the rest of them. But I mean, wouldn't that be more enticing to Ernie if it's like, okay, well, Shaq, Kenny, and Chuck are going. So I mean, you know,
And to be quite honest, I think that the NBA is more than willing to cut all their ties with TNT. I think it's that studio show that if they had their influence, that's the valuable piece that I don't know how this ends. If there's a lawsuit, would not surprise me. I could also see them just trying to work something out. They do not want to have a multi-month battle here. And what are you looking at if you're WBD? You're going to hold a gun to their head to be in business with them. I think it's a poor look for them with your other sports leagues that this is the kind of public relations battle we're going to have. I just think it's a really bad look for WBD. I think they want to save some face here and be able to say, hey, we tried everything we could to keep this property. And maybe, as you mentioned, Andrew, maybe they can work out something where it's like they can license the rights to Inside the NBA or come up with something creative where WBD gets something out of this monetarily, something that, but I think this is going to be I think for the NBA, they just want to wrap this up and start to focus on their next set of deals.
Yeah. The NBA is most definitely ready to move on. You can tell by their statement, but like, I mean, there's a part of me that gets WBD's stance on it, because that's a, like you said, that's a huge property to lose, man. Like losing the NBA, and then on top of it, like you talking about all the potential of that Inside the NBA show, because I think that within the grand scheme of all of this, like just seeing the amount of fanfare that that show has and just knowing what it has had and how many people tune into that show on a daily or sometimes weekly basis when the season is ongoing, that's a huge loss for TNT. But even looking at the season starts in October. So it's like,
can you imagine a whole year where the Inside the NBA crew, they know it's over at the end and you got Charles Barkley that can just like, that will be must see television. Like he's not going to bite his tongue.
Yeah, I know. And it could be
some very entertaining programming for a year that TNT gets out of this.
I've seen the idea suggested that they like go off and do their own thing. So I'm referring to that Inside the NBA crew. But I think the more intriguing part of all this is like where WBD is like, it's either they clearly have two options. You either just let it go or, like you said, try to weave some type of deal to where you get something out of this and don't like the NBA just doesn't completely go elsewhere. So
given that this is such like having the NBA or losing the NBA, it's like such a different set of circumstances. Do you think that this at all like pauses WBD's ability to like close a deal with AEW until they know what's happening with the NBA? Or do you think that they're going to just proceed in those negotiations business as usual? And if they lock down an AEW deal, they'll do it. Or do you think that they want to have this figured out before they're completing that deal?
You know, like I remember you and I had a conversation about this. This was like some months ago when the news first came out that it was going to be like the NBA was kind of shopping around and they were probably going to land somewhere else as far as their like main basketball programming. But I think it'll probably be like a benefit for AEW, because I'm pretty sure that WBD is like, okay, we just lost our biggest property. Let's not try to lose something that's weekly live television is giving us hours and hours of content. Let's not do that. So I think that it would be beneficial to AEW from that standpoint. But I mean, I think that remains to be seen. I know I saw the Fight with Select report that said that Tony Khan is supposed to meet with David Zaslav in Paris. So I'm pretty sure after that you'll probably hear something announced by some big time outlet like by Variety or some outlet like that.
Yes. Well, the Olympics are beginning on Friday, and yes, Tony Khan expected to go over there and. We'll see what comes out of the Paris talks with the very covert talks with Tony Khan and Mr. Zaslav, as Tony likes to refer to him as. Well, tonight, you may not have realized it because they didn't put too much of an emphasis on it. But coming up over the next couple of days, AEW/ROH are going to produce an ungodly amount of content between Rampage, which is being taped now, that will have the Royal Rampage Battle Royal. The winner will get the title shot at Grand Slam. That is going to go head to head with ROH's Death Before Dishonor show, which has five matches announced so far, and I'm sure a series of matches will be added to that. The key matches are Mark Briscoe and Roderick Strong for the ROH title, Athena and Queen Aminata for the women's belt, Billy Starks against Red Velvet for the women's world television title, Wheeler Yuta against Lee Moriarty has been added for the pure title, and a Texas death match between Diamante and Layla Hirsch. Then, after you take a breather from those roughly 5 hours, they come back Saturday with 2 hours of Collision, followed by a Battle of the Belts, which I guess Battle of the Belts is the best kept secret, because I don't think, Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Battle of the Belts, those words did not come out of anyone's mouth on Wednesday night.
Yeah, man, they have a lot of content that like sort of circle around. It doesn't seem like an overload issue, because I mean, you have enough talent to put on these respective shows, but it definitely is a lot to intake for sure.
I think that Battle of the Belts card will likely come together on Rampage, maybe even on Collision on Saturday. It says, hey, stick around. We're doing another hour. Okay. We got you. Just stick around.
We got something coming up. It's coming.
Just trust us. Okay. Trust us. So there you go. What stands out to you on the Death Before Dishonor card? Is this a pay-per-view you're going to be cherry picking, checking out anything else? Like, to me, this is one where, I mean, I'll try, but this is going to be very difficult between like G1 and everything going on. Every weekend it is just becoming like it's like a strategy of how you're going to attack this. And it's a lot for anyone, I think, to try and catch this.
I'm going to try to watch it. I think more than likely I'll probably watch it in full, probably sometime over the weekend or probably next week. But honestly, the matches I'm probably most interested in just seeing so far is probably the women's matches, the Women's World TV title match, and Athena versus Queen Aminata, and seeing Red Velvet take on Billy Starks. And for the main event, Mark Briscoe versus Roderick Strong, I hope that they do not take that title off Mark Briscoe. Like, he is doing some of his best work, in my opinion, in terms of just seeing the personality of this individual. Like, I think Mark Briscoe has shined on the segments that he's had on AEW television. So I hope that he continues to hold the ROH world title.
And also happening on Friday night is Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. And this is an interesting one. That's on Friday too.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that's going head to head with the ROH pay-per-view as well. But this is an interesting card. I mean, you have talent from TNA. You have talent from WWE. It's a really interesting, just mix of all these different performers that you have on here. I mean, you've got Julius Creed against Matt Mikowski, Brutus Creed against Tom Lawler, a match I was not expecting to see this year or any year. Charlie Dempsey is on the card against Royce Isaacs, Shayna Baszler against Miyu Yamashita, Mike Santana against Homicide, Timothy Thatcher and Josh Woods, Masha Slamovich against Jody Threat, and Josh Barnett against Bad Dude Tito. I don't know about Tito's chances in that main event.
He's definitely losing, but that show is on Sunday.
Is that Sunday? I've got all my dates. Forgive me, folks. There's too much going on. That is Sunday in Brooklyn. So yes, you have a few extra days before you can check that one out. But that's on Triller TV Plus. So I mean, the Bloodsport cards are always a lot of fun to watch, and it's interesting just to see like the eclectic talent that they're able to work with and put together some of these unique matches.
I like, especially the match that Shayna had with Masha at the Philly Bloodsport show. Dude, I love seeing Shayna in these environments. I feel like this is where in-ring style always thrives. Like, I don't think the Shayna Baszler big TV wrestler is like her thing. Like, when she's in these type of environments, so like, even when she was in I think the reason why her act got over so well in NXT is because it was more of a closed circuit environment. Like, it wasn't 10,000, 15,000 people that you gotta appeal to, you know. Look, I think these type of environments are like where Shayna Baszler like thrives, and I'm really looking forward to seeing a match with Miyu. I think it's gonna be a good one.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Last thing before we get to the Dynamite review. Earlier today, Brandon Thurston and I had an interview with Matt Camp, who was the former co-host on The Bump. And he was part of Raw Talk, SmackDown, Lowdown, a bunch of the digital properties that WWE put out. He was there from 2019 until earlier this year. And he had some great insight into working at WWE, understanding the role he was in there working with WWE. And we're just going to play a quick 1 minute clip. And this was Matt talking about going back to, it was 2 years ago this week that Vince McMahon put out his first tweet, also taking the tact of announcing his withdrawal by going to Twitter and announcing his first resignation, his first of two resignations. And then the following weekend was SummerSlam. And Matt talked about what the vibe was like at SummerSlam that weekend amongst the talent and different people in the post, well, at the time, supposedly post Vince McMahon world.
It was a different world. It was a different atmosphere. Nobody was walking on eggshells. And I'm not saying it was like that all the time, but it just felt looser. And Stephanie's there. And
you could see her face. And, you know, Hunter's running the show. And it just felt like everybody was there to have a good time. It didn't feel like there was that same kind of pressure. And there wasn't, you know, they stuck to the game plan that night. It wasn't getting rewritten or changed or things like that. And I remember being out there and I didn't know about damage control. And I was just out there for the first match and watching, you know, from our area in the crowd. And I went, okay, things are different now, you know, and it stayed that way. And I know people were like, well, that was what the creative was. And I was like, you're not, you know, Dakota came on The Bump 3 days later and was like, I got a call a week ago. Like I just got told. So Hunter had stuff that he wanted to do. I think he fell in line for a bit. I think Vince still had people's ears. I still think Vince had backers when he retired. And that certainly did continue and everything that came of that. And, but when he was gone, you knew it. But I, you know, the Brock Omos match is the most like, that's Vince. And I don't think it was even a bad idea, but it was the most like, that's clearly Vince. Like, that's not something that Paul was going to put on the card.
So there, Andrew. Also, I mean, that was where the signal went up, at least for Matt Camp, when he saw Brock Lesnar being booked with Omos. So, I mean, kind of just implying that both Paul Levesque and Chris Ely on the same page when it comes to one Omos, who has apparently joined the Witness Protection Program in WWE. Unless you're at a house show, you just do not see Omos. This man is just... the world's largest invisible man in WWE.
He's doing the cologne fragrance reviews on YouTube now.
Well, like, I mean, diversify. That would be. I do wonder what the future is for one Omos.
Like honestly, like I always thought that Paul Levesque would try to make it work with Omos since he was like that was somebody that he went out and recruited himself. Like he brought Omos in, so I would think that he would like. Especially with those people, like those individuals, like the Kevin Owens and the Finn Balors and the people who were in the thick of that NXT with him, he seems to like take care of a lot. And it's seeing this out, he went out there and got Omos to bring him in. Like I was under the assumption that he would try to do, you know, something to try to figure something out with him. But especially like with MVP being like on his way out and, you know, I just don't know like what they try to do with Omos or with it. Where he fits within this current WWE TV product. I just don't know what they do with him.
That whole interview with Matt Camp, you can hear on today's Pollock and Thurston, but we're going to shift focus and move on over to tonight's edition of Dynamite, the Blood and Guts edition from the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. WrestleTix reporting, they got just over 5,000 tickets out for the show. And it was announced on Tuesday afternoon that Joe Biden would be delivering a speech to the nation right at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And the speech, I mean, it ended up being about 10 minutes. But of course, you do have all the wraparound coverage. I'm sure a lot of cable news, you know, everyone was going to be covering this speech. We'll see what kind of impact, if any, it has on Dynamite. But it's not like the speech was super long either. Yeah. But was going at least against the beginning 10 minutes of the show. And if you were tuning in late, you would have missed Alex Marvez in the hotel parking garage What he was doing there, trying to find an interview, I have no idea. But Will Ospreay comes by, and his tire has been slashed. So then he takes Alex Marvez's keys and asks if he has a car. He does, and they jump into Alex Marvez's car, and Ospreay decides he's going to drive. And the joke is Alex asking if he has ever driven in America before as they just take off. But they made it there a lot, although we never saw Alex Marvez, so we assume he made it there in one piece. Ospreay did, and that was our start to the show.
What a start to the show. What a start. Kicking off blood and guts.
What's going on here? There's a lot going on here. This tire slash. And Will was 5 minutes late for Dynamite. That's what it turned out, because
he made it, though. There we go.
He did make it.
So where was he prior to getting to Nashville?
Yeah, like where he gets there, like I want to say 6 minutes after this, during MJF's promo, he gets there. And like, what was his travel plan had the car been working? He was still going to be roughly like, you know, on time, roughly. Like this was like a 5 minute distraction for him. But he makes it to the ring. MJF comes out. There's a team of cheerleaders there, and he insults the audience, stating Ospreay couldn't even beat Swerve. What made everyone think he could beat me? And he warns Swerve he has not forgotten about the championship. He is just waiting for the right moment to pounce. So at least putting the title back into the periphery for MJF. He says last week was easily the easiest match of his life. Wrestling analysts are calling it his most dominant win ever. And he brings up Ospreay's grandmother recently dying. And you just hear this universal groan, because they know that he is going to go low here. And he tells Ospreay to dig a grave next to hers, that fat skank. And then in reference to digging a plot further away from her tombstone. And at this moment, I mean, as you, the viewer at home, are just letting that line sit, Shivani, then it all clicks for him in this moment. MJF slashed the tire. Yes, Tony. Case closed. Tony Schiavone, right in this moment, it's so unprompted, but it's like this message from the heavens to come down into his lap. Wait a minute. I think MJF slashed that tire.
Bro, like, so with the whole, you know, referencing his deceased grandmother line, I'm like, what are we doing? I mean, like, I get the whole, you know, trying to make these programs as important as they can be, as heated as they can be, going into your biggest show of the year, it would be stadium. But it's like, come on, man. But I mean, that's like typical MJF stuff, right? So it's not like I'm surprised or anything like that. And on top of that, Christian makes fun of people's deceased fathers all
the time. Well, I was going to say, like, this was Christian's deal for so long. And on this show alone, we got this line from MJF. We later got a line from Nick Wayne. It kind of just feels like the dead relative insult is becoming just the new like, we can swear on television. I think it kind of loses its luster when it's just kind of becoming a easy go-to.
I think we should just let that be a Christian thing. Like, just let that be his thing. I don't think everybody needs to do that, but
he then mocks the fans. They're chanting asshole at MJF, and then he starts to talk about the international title and how all these fans are unpatriotic and treasonous, and that this title is garbage, just like Daniel Garcia, Will Ospreay, and all of you hicks. So he proceeds to toss the international title into a garbage can and unveils the new title, the American Championship. And this crowd, who have just been insulted up and down by this guy, they see this belt. They're all chanting USA. And MJF has to turn on Nashville, saying, listen, I'm not talking about nasty ass Nashville. I'm talking about the real America, Plainview, Long Island, New York. And we get this big confetti celebration. This looked like the scene that was cut from the Republican convention last week. And in place, as the American flag is draped from the ceiling, in place of the stars are MJF's face. And this is when Will Ospreay storms the ring, chasing away Max. And he explains what happened in the final minute of their match. Now, I don't know if you had the same edit, but watching on Triller, as I was, they just went to like bars here, and it wasn't even like censored. It was just, it totally cut out here. And we come back and the crowd's chanting small dick at MJF. So I imagine we had some kind of dick joke here, but, this was too much for Triller.
Yeah. Like on, the TV broadcast feed that I had, it was, more so like, it was like the words were like slurred that Ospreay was saying, and then it like cut in and out. And then that's when I came back to with like, it's like they purposely cut to the crowd so you can hear the small dick chants. Like you can like see people mouthing it. So you get the clear vision or get the clear,
I like that. This was the line that's too far for a show that we were literally going to see a man threaten to be like lit on fire by the end of the night. But this is too far. So anyway,
what did you make of the title belt, the All-American championship?
I mean, I'm kind of curious to see how well he plays this. I mean, I guess you're just setting up kind of this like patriotic asshole that's going to go into England as your American champion. Like, I do feel this. The first thing I thought of is like, this is going to get a ton of heat in Mexico next week when he goes to Arena Mexico, with Templario, which actually they did promote on the show. They promoted more title matches for Arena Mexico next week than they for Battle of the Belts. It's fine. It kind of feels like a little kind of like, it almost feels like MJF's almost above doing just this like American Patriot gimmick, but it is kind of in vogue right now to play up the super American Patriot.
If it was any time to play that whole thing, then I guess now is the right time. So, I mean, when I was seeing this, I was kind of wondering, with Daniel Garcia is in the fold for All In? Because I was thinking, like, maybe he would be involved in some type of, like, ordeal between MJF and Ospreay and be involved with one of them. But, you know, he's on the outs right now. But, I mean, I think the All-American Championship makes sense based off, like, just, you know, how you just referenced it. You know, with the whole, you know, going into England and him being the American champion and all this stuff, and Ospreay getting this big win, second big win in a year in a row, at All In for Will Ospreay. So, yeah.
It is one where I hope they show some highlights of him at Arena Mexico. Like, it should be a pretty rabid crowd, and MJF playing that up to the tilt. I think that would be like great footage that you can just build this American championship. And here he goes down to Mexico, and he should have like tremendous heat for.
I was just about to say that. I think he is too. I think he's gonna get a lot of heat going down there. So we will see. What's that? August 2nd.
That's next Friday. So, cool. And then the end was Will Ospreay stating that he had a meeting with Tony Khan and Christopher Daniels, and he has a rematch at All In, and then pulls the international title out of the trash can. So, somehow, Andrew, we came out of this segment with more titles than we started with, because this international title, I don't think Will's going to I think we're going to have more titles here.
This is the third time this belt has been changed. Cause, I mean, it was the All Atlantic, then we had the international, now we got this All America Championship. So I'm assuming that Will's going to reveal the All British, All England Championship at All In when he wins it or something like that. But yeah, they need to find something solid with this title, like enough of the. Like, let this All-American Championship be it. Like, no more. Go back to the international. Leave it alone. Let's leave it alone.
Bryce Remsburg is in the back. He goes into the Elite's locker room to do the coin flip. But there, Christopher Daniels, who's also supposed to be there to oversee this, has been laid out. And Matt Jackson wins the coin toss. There is no Hangman Page. And Matt Jackson insists that Hangman will be there. But yes, the heels will have the one-man advantage in Blood and Guts. Chris Jericho against Minoru Suzuki for the FTW Championship. Big Bill and Brian Keith are banned from ringside, and we've got Chris Jericho in trunks for this match. And they came out, and they start chopping and chopping and chopping. And this just escalates and escalates. Their chests are so red. And then finally, Jericho does a face flop as they go to picture-in-picture. This whole picture-in-picture, they continue to chop. The crowd starts chanting, "Chop forever." And Tony mistakenly hears "shop forever," which he points out. And that leads to Excalibur. Like, his brain just instantly goes to promoting shopaew.com. Jericho's chest starts bleeding from this as he's running out of gas. And then finally, he delivers a kick. And man, this crowd, they just booed that this guy was blinking first as he goes for a clothesline. And Suzuki catches him with the armbar and the ropes and then go to the floor, where Suzuki attacks him with a chair, places his hand in the chair, and smashes it with another. He's bending the fingers, applying the Fujiwara. And then Jericho gets away, hits uses a thumb to the eye and a code breaker, but Suzuki kicks out at one. He gets the walls after a gotch attempt is made. And then After a follow-up Gotch gets blocked, Jericho hits a low blow, which is legal in the FTW rules, and hits the Judas Effect to win at 13 minutes and 57 seconds. Now, what do you think about the match?
Me as a well-known Chris Jericho hater, it's very hard for me to give this man props right now, but I am going to give him props. I enjoyed this match way more than I thought I would. That I feel like that typically happens with me with matches I don't have like that high of expectations for. Not that I thought that was going to be bad, but just I wasn't thinking much of it, and I ended up enjoying it a lot. And I think Suzuki, like I feel like in some of these like even appearances that I've seen him in on the indies, like I kind of feel like the presentation has I've gotten very used to this presentation. It hasn't felt like the Suzuki that we would see like in a 2021 or something like that, where it didn't feel special, but like it kind of felt like he got back that tonight. And you got to give Jericho some credit on that. So, because I think he made Suzuki look like a beast. So, you know, and then on top of that, when the match is over, Suzuki ended up, you know, getting his heat back and, you know, got to give him the Gotch style pile driver. So, John, it's burning my chest up right now to be doing this.
This is Mr. Objectivity, Andrew Thompson. You know, he's a professional through and through. Listen, I can't disagree. I had the same thought. I didn't know how, like, this to me was one of Minoru Suzuki's better just presentations that I've seen in a long time. And I think both guys, they came in with a really unique idea for a match that could have it might not have worked, but it totally worked. And and I think just the addition of like the chest bleeding and how hard they went at it. Like I mean, Jericho just gave a ton to Suzuki here. Even afterward, Suzuki rises and Jericho misses a strike and Suzuki gives him the Gotch pile driver. So everyone gets their pop for Suzuki before Brian Keith and Big Bill attack. And that led to Shibata running out to clear the ring and back up Suzuki. So, yeah, I thought this was really well put together, and the audience really just they responded heavily to all of the chops and everything. Like I thought for both guys, this was one of their better outings in quite some time.
Yeah, I was about to say the crowd definitely ate this matchup. So, I mean, like I said, man, it's difficult for me to do this, but I think it was a very impressive performance by Chris Jericho. And I think the last time I saw, like, it wasn't that long the last time I felt like invested in Suzuki match. I think it was the match he had with Copeland. What was that on that? That was right. On Dynamite, right? Yeah, I think he had a good showing in that as well. So, yeah, when seeing the Shibata running, what was the last time Shibata and Suzuki wrestled? Was that like before? That was like right before the
well back. Yeah, they had
brain injury.
Yeah, they had various singles matches in New Japan, like going back to like the early 2000s, but. And one or two where they like tag together, but it's they haven't had anything together since since the brain injury.
You know what? I think Suzuki and Shibata, they're gonna be wrestling in October at Takeyama's Taki Mania show,
right?
Yeah, at Korakuen. So yeah, I think I'm sure AEW's not promoting that, but like
no, probably not.
Yeah, but when it came when I thought about it, I was like, oh yeah, that is happening in October. And Takeyama, he's like paralyzed from the from the waist down. So yeah, that's his little tribute show, benefit show to help with his medical funds.
Renee is backstage with Willow Nightingale, and she immediately gets attacked by Chris Statlander, and this leads to Stokely Hathaway proposing a title eliminator match next week for the CMLL Women's Championship. So not even just going for the title match. They're like, we understand we have to earn it, so title eliminator first.
You think that's happening at the Arena Mexico show? Because that's the win. That's the Friday before after Dynamite.
Yeah, I took this as the eliminator would be on Dynamite next
Dynamite,
week.
Right. And then the title match would be on Friday.
You think that the title match could be on the Friday show?
Because I just can't see them doing. Well, I mean, I could see Chris versus Willow at the Arena Mexico show, but I'm pretty sure AEW would want that on their programming. But I mean, I don't know.
I see this one probably happening in AEW. That would be my thought. But
yeah.
I could see Willow potentially being on that show next Friday, possibly.
Oh, yeah.
And wrestles somebody else, potentially. Earlier today, Bryan Danielson is doing an interview with Renee and talking about just taking it all in, to work at Wembley Stadium, and Jeff Jarrett comes out. Dude, Jeff Jarrett is looking just, he's looking swole.
Yeah, he on that.
This
AJ
guy's got
Styles
some arms
regimen.
On him.
AJ Styles, CM Punk regimen right now. That's what he on.
He comes in and he said how much it was crushing him that he lost the Owen Hart Cup, but Danielson overcame the odds when I didn't. And he's proud that Danielson won. You were the right guy. But he says that Swerve is so dialed in, and he suggests that Danielson not only has to recover mentally, he also has to heal mentally, because you have one foot out the door and you've already got an excuse built in. And he tells him, if you're going to go all in, go all in, because a lot of people believe in you and I'm at the top of that list. And Renee just says, what do you think about that, Brian? And he says, part of that is true. I've got some work to do. And he is, he's got like his Yoda here and Jeff Jarrett too. So I think they're just playing with the idea. Like, this guy is on this farewell tour and he's not in the mindset to be ready for someone the level of Swerve.
I say, so, John, can you talk about this promo run that Jeff Jarrett has been on, man? Like, this dude is like, hey, like, in all seriousness, if the Owen didn't have the stakes that it has attached to in terms of like the winner goes to main event Wembley Stadium,
he's easily going to the finals.
Jeff Jarrett is easily. I'm talking about over probably anybody else in that tournament. I'm like, you can roll with Jeff, but just because of the stakes, you can't do it. But like, I think, man, dude, I don't know what got into Jeff Jarrett lately, like with these segments and these like promos where he's just like speaking from the heart, and like if it feels genuine in everything that he's saying. Like, baby face turn for everybody, for him and everybody in his group. So there you go. And you want to know, I was thinking before about going back to the Willow and Chris thing. I was thinking about how Chris and Stokely tried to cost Willow the Owen. But I mean, it didn't turn out that way in the finish. I mean, she Ryan ended up winning, but it didn't, like, she got interfered when it didn't lose. So it happened late in the match. But I was thinking maybe Willow shows up in that eliminator match and calls Chris her match. And then that'd be a way to, you know, do the Willow versus whoever title match at the Arena Mexico show without having to do Willow versus Chris.
That's something you could do, totally, and introduce somebody else as well. So Britt Baker and Hikaru Shida was next. This is Britt Baker's first match since last September, and they showed highlights of their previous matches from November of 2019, April 2020, and Double or Nothing 2021, including the match where Baker broke her nose against Shida. I thought these two had a really strong match together. You had Shida taking like the first like three quarters of the match until Baker comes back with a sling blade. She takes out the glove, but Shida is ready with a German and is transitioning to a triangle, then into a guillotine, and drills Baker with a knee to the face. And Shida comes off the top, misses, so Baker connects with a super kick, and then Shida sees the kendo stick in the corner, and she's looking at it, and it's her Tiger Driver. And she's hesitating, but she can't do it. She won't grab the kendo stick. And instead, she's hit with a rolling elbow and a swinging neck breaker as the lockjaw is at first avoided. And she manages a falcon arrow, sets up for the katana, which is countered. They scramble on the mat, and it ends in the lockjaw position, submitting Shida in 10 minutes and 18 seconds. I thought these two worked really hard. I thought the crowd was into this, and I thought this was really... Like, this really did just get a really solid win for Britt Baker, and to go like 10 minutes, and you left a lot afterwards of wanting to see her in this big Mercedes match they're building towards. I thought this worked pretty well.
Yeah, I think Shida is like the perfect first opponent back for Britt Baker. Like, from every Shida Britt match that I remember, especially the Double or Nothing 2021 one, I feel like they always work well together. They have good chemistry, and it's obvious they like understand a lot of each other's movesets. So, I really wasn't surprised to see how well this match turned out. It was interesting. I was interested to see how Britt was going to be in her first match back in so long. And I think Shida was like the perfect person to throw her in there. When I think this match is going to be like the catalyst to fully submit Sheeta's heel turn. And she just like full on lean into it now because she hesitated. So now she's not going to hesitate the next time it comes about. And then, you know, we'll see a full blown heel of Hikaru Shida.
So Mercedes comes out and gets a lot of boos and mentions how Baker wants this title shot at All In. And my answer is no. And as Baker is standing in the ring from behind, it is your former NWA Women's Champion Camille, who jumps Baker and nails her with this pump kick. And Tony Schiavone just sells it big. Shit, that's Camille. That's one of the most dangerous women in the industry. And she puts her in a torture rack, turns it into a Blue Thunder Bomb, and Monet and Camille pose together over the fallen Britt Baker. And Andrew, this has been an expected arrival in AEW for months. It's been so long, and now we've got her in as, I guess, like Monet's muscle.
I said, what was that, January, when Camille had went on Twitter and was like, yeah, I know where I'm going and stuff like that. So it's been 7 months at this point. So finally she got to show up on television. But you want to know what? Like, I thought, just firstly on Mercedes, like, I'm so glad that they're fully leaning into the heel role, because, like, I've even dating back to WWE, Mercedes is a baby face for me. It's like she can play that role. And I think that also when people see her wrestle, they naturally gravitate towards her. But I feel like just outside of the ring, in terms of like these segments and on the microphone, like I feel like she is just best suited as a heel. And this is where she does her best work. So it's good to see them fully leaning into that as well. And then on top of that, like I really don't think like the core AEW fan base is going to choose Mercedes over Britt. So I think that this did just work out like perfectly. And then Camille as well. Like I honestly, when they did the camera, like the pan back, and you could tell something was about to happen. Like I thought it was going to be the Renegade Twins. Like I just assumed that they were going to be like the two individuals that were going to line with Mercedes, because they had been like teasing it on social media. So I thought that was like eventually going to come. But I think this is a much better suit for this position to be aligned with Mercedes. Seeing them visually together, like when I saw it, I was like, okay, this is cool, and I'm interested to see how this sort of plays out. We've seen these storylines in AEW before when they had like the protege or the security, and then eventually the person turns or whatever like that. So we're gonna see how this all plays out, but I think it's a good introduction for Camille.
Do you think that Camille is sort of like the hurdle that Britt Baker has to get to get the title match? Or do you think they just keep Camille sort of in this bodyguard role, and maybe that's something further down the line?
I definitely think that they're going to they're going to do the match between Camille and Britt before All In, and Mercedes versus Britt is happening at All In. But what I think is going to happen is they'll do Camille assisting Mercedes in some type of way at All In, you know, and then they'll probably put the boost to her after the match, and then that's when we see Jamie Hayter return to like even the odds, you know, she'll get her big pop and stuff like that. So I think that, and then, you know, once the odds are even, then I think we'll eventually see Britt take the TBS title from Mercedes, and that's how that'll all play out. But yeah, we're definitely gonna see that Britt Camille match. Like with Camille, like she had that long NWA women's title run. Like, I think that is definitely going to help her in terms of like just the keeping up like with the in-ring requirements that are going to be asked of her. Like, I think that she improved a lot just from over the years that I've seen her in NWA, from versus when she first started to where she was from the last time I saw her. Like, I
think she just didn't speak at the beginning.
Yeah, she did not speak at all. And like, I think that she's improved a lot, like, since when we first got introduced to her on those early Power episodes. So yeah, it's a good spot for her. It's a good starting spot. Like, I like this as opposed to like, you know, just her showing up randomly, like as some guest opponent or something, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's something intriguing that you can sink your teeth into.
Yeah. It would be funny to go back and watch like those very first episodes of Power. Yeah. And if you're putting your futures down on like where some of these people were going to go, and it's like they had quite the core at the beginning. Yeah. When you look at it, like that is where, like, that's where I first saw Ricky Starks was there. Like, I wasn't seeing him on like Independence before that.
Like, when you think about some of the people that were on, some, like you just said, like the Eddie Kingston's, LA Knight, look at Nick Aldis, Thunder Rosa. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of crazy to look at the Raw today. Like, honestly, if that pandemic didn't hit, like, I kind of wonder like how that Power show would have turned out long term, because they had like a nice solid core roster. I'm pretty sure most of those individuals would have ended up signing somewhere like bigger at some point, but I definitely think the pandemic sort of like put the hard brakes on that, and everybody just moved on.
We go to the back, and the Patriarchy with their recently won trios titles. Nick Wayne is in the Royal Rampage on Friday, and therefore Christian says he has earned the right to speak for himself. And Nick Wayne uses this solo time to notice Kip Sabian off camera. So he goes to confront this guy. Kip Sabian also in the Royal Rampage, and Nick promises to throw him out and adds, "No one cares that your dad is dead. Be a man and suck it up."
The deceased relatives, man. Like, if you have any recent passings in your family,
keep it to yourself.
Don't tell nobody nothing. And AEW, Jesus Christ, what is that, man? Like, you want to know what? Like, I'm curious to see how people. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure all these individuals are, like, good actors, and you know, you hold it. But like, just hearing somebody say that, so even though you know it's a, you probably gave them the green light to do it. Like, I'm pretty sure that hit the heart a little bit, like hearing somebody say, even though you probably, like I said, you probably gave him the green light to say it, but still, like hearing that from somebody, that's tough, man. But yeah, who you think is going? I was going to look and see if it got spoiled already. I don't think it did, but who you think is going to win the Royal Rampage?
It's hard because I don't know who's in this thing. I mean, I'm hoping like a lot of the top names are in this, but like it's always a crapshoot. Like maybe people in the chat might be following along with like the results from Nashville and stuff. But
it's such a gap too, because we got All In, All Out,
and then this, yeah,
Grand Slam.
I do like the fact that they're at least like shelving this away, that we're gonna know who that Grand Slam challenger is. Like, we're literally building up for a match 2 months away. But I kind of like the fact that, okay, we're at least gonna know where that one is, and you can go with like a smaller name even and use these 2 months to really build that person up. It doesn't have to be like a Moxley level person when it's this far out and it's TV, and it should be someone that's, you know, they're on the rise, and this is you know, and you also don't know who they'll be challenging by the fact that you have to get through all these pay-per-views from now. So I kind of like that they're doing it early, but I hope that it's somebody that they build up significantly. And
maybe it's Daniel Garcia. Maybe he wins it.
If he has feeling in his extremities, which
there you go.
He didn't as of the attack. I if all things were equal, that would have been kind of the level of guy you would want to look for this. So unless he made a miracle recovery in Nashville, it's always possible. Then we go to a pair of just real quick matches just to get some wins for people. Pac against Boulder of the Iron Savages. There was this funny part where the camera was fixed on Pac as he's in the tunnel. And it's like he's waiting for his cue. I thought this looked so creepy with Pac just like looking there, and he's like looking towards the camera. I'm almost positive this was not meant to be done purposely, but it was.
You don't think so?
I was watching this, and I thought that they were like they cut before he had gotten his cue to walk out. Listen, I liked it. I would say if it was done on purpose, great. But this should be his entrance, because he's just looking like he's like seething and getting into like he just wants to get this. This entrance underway, and he's being like caged.
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought that was done on purpose. Like, I really love that shot that they do a pack. Like, I really enjoy that whole like the camera, the additional camera work. I used to really like what they used to do with Brody Lee's entrance when they would like when he would cut the tunnel and they would do like a full wraparound shot. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to love that. I like that stuff like that used to pop me so much, and I love this particular shot with Pac. But yeah, just a quick little win for him. Oh yeah, he's gonna be on that. What's that? The CMLL show, him, Penta and Phoenix on, what's that, the 26th? I think they're going to be there. They're going to be facing
Voldemort, right.
Mystico, and I can't remember the third individual. But yeah, they're going to be at that CMLL show. So there you go.
So Excalibur promotes the MJF Templario match for next Friday night for the American Championship. Pac gets up after Boulder misses a moonsault off the turnbuckle, drop kick in the corner, missile drop kick, and a brainbuster for the win in a minute 48. Just a quick win. That's all this really needed to be. Team AEW is in the back, and Swerve states that he is going to lead the team. Darby takes issue with this, says you're not leading anyone. They have words, and Swerve says he's willing to get violent with Darby later. The Acclaimed jump in. They don't care about their petty problems. This is about us getting our tag titles back. And Mark Briscoe has to play peacemaker, putting all of their differences aside. They are Team AEW tonight. They stand united, and we are violent people. So kind of continuing his conglomeration role amongst Team AEW.
I say, have you surprisingly enjoyed that little faction, the conglomerate?
It's something weird that seems to have just, it fell into their lap and that they're running with it, which is, I think, given that it's so hard to find roles for some of these people, like a Kyle O'Reilly. I don't know what he would be like. He's got this thing going on with the Undisputed Kingdom, which feels like it's this story that's kind of just going and going and
has no end.
Not anything I don't know if like anyone's really sinking their teeth into, but this little pairing I think is doing more for him just to play off of Mark Briscoe, that it at least gives them some promo time each week, and it puts these, you know, baby faces together for a segment. And sometimes that's necessary just to find like these groupings, because a lot of these people can just get lost in the shuffle in AEW. It's very easy for these people to just be forgotten if there's not something that, you know, you're in a group setting and it gives you a reason to at least get a promo segment every week. So, and for Mark Briscoe, I think he's, you know, I think he's been excellent throughout this whole period. And you're seeing it. Like, he's now becoming much more of a fixture on AEW, which is, you know, he's to me been just a great addition in this singles role, and somebody that I think might, if people are looking for more hours of wrestling, he's a reason people are going to check out an ROH pay-per-view, for instance.
And speaking of like Kyle O'Reilly, I think the last time he had some of a, like, I think substance was, when was the match against Copeland when they were in Canada?
In Vancouver.
That's what it was like. Mm-hmm. That was
a great match. That was right before the injury to Copeland, before. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, I feel like with Kyle, like a lot of his, like, I feel like a lot of his, not personality, but more so just his, like, he's so like attached to Adam Cole to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if that's just anybody else, but I feel like when the only times that I've ever felt like, outside of like what I just mentioned and a few other occasions, I feel like he's so just attached to this one individual, and like, even just from company to company, like I feel like it's hard to like for him to find himself without this other individual existing. You know what I'm saying? It's like this weird thing with Cal, but you know, I do like him in the conglomerate, so hopefully it continues.
Another quick match was Mariah May against Caitlin Alexis, and Mariah comes out with her Owen belt and the shoe that she destroyed Toni Storm with, and it's got her blood on the shoe. Alexis is from Nashville, and May just annihilates her with strikes, hits a missile drop kick, Falcon Arrow, and then the hip attack followed by the Storm Zero. So she wins in a minute 36. And then Toni Storm's music plays and the place goes wild, but it's just a ploy by Mariah May, who laughs. But then a woman in disguise enters the ring, and it's Toni Storm, and they come to blows as the refs and officials run in. And this crowd was going pretty wild for this pull apart at the end of it. And Toni yells, "Be prepared to die, because I am."
The crowd wanted this. I wanted this. This is when they first did that initial angle after she when she turned on Toni, I think that was for sure probably one of the best angles that AEW has ever done. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't like the follow up that much. The when she came out and she was dressed like Toni and stuff. I didn't think it hit that hard. And but I mean, obviously the crowd is still very much into this, and it's going to be interesting to see how the London crowd reacts to Mariah May. So that's a home turf. So, but I mean, you know, Toni has her roots in the UK as well. So, like, when I was about to ask you something, but yeah, what do you think about the build to this year's All In compared to last year's, especially considering last year it felt like they were like simultaneously building All Out, because it was like the weekend. It was like the very next weekend. So it felt like it was just this like jumbled up kind of thing, even though you had your solid matches. But this year it feels like, you know, they had you can get like a good feel for what the top 6-7 matches are going to look like for this year's show.
I think it's such a more focused build this year that even the matches they haven't announced, you can envision what a lot of this card is going to look like, because all the stories have been building towards this. I think they used the Owen way better this year in terms of, yes, you had like this Jarrett aspect to it, but overall, I like the idea that this tournament was to set up your title challengers. This Storm May thing has been built up very effectively. Like last year, the criticism was like a lot of this was like they weren't announcing stuff until later. And it's not so much just announcing things, but it's also like what is being built towards. Like, you should be able to look and figure out, okay, this is where all of this is building toward. And I think it's a significantly better promoted card this year, as well. But the question is, as well as we get closer, like, what's going to be the ceiling for the show? Like, obviously they're not doing 80,000 again, but are, like, they're right around like 42 ish, I think is like the last check. And what is that movement going to be like over the next month? Cause I do think they did run into some folks who, when tickets went on sale, like, the price was a little daunting for people. Like, these were high ticket prices. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what the movement's like over this last month. If they surpass 50, like where this thing tops out at ticket wise.
I think they top out at 60, 65.
You think they go to 60?
I think they go. I'm sticking. So I was saying 65 to be dry. I'm gonna say 60. I think they go 60. I think there'll be enough.
60 is a real successful number. If they hit 60, yeah. It's like, honestly, the show as it is, like, you're doing 40,000 people. That's a really good number. Like, regardless, like, yes, everyone's gonna make the comparisons year over year, but that's I would say like.
Putting 40,000 people in the arena, 50,000 people in the arena for any wrestling, that's, you know what I'm saying? That's a win as far as how I view things. But I understand that there's going to be like criticism regardless, or, you know, people having varying takes. But I think they can, at the very least, I say 55. Okay. Very least, 55.
What are your thoughts on, do you feel they do all in at Wembley again for a third year in a row? Or do you think that they move this to another like stadium sized venue somewhere else in the world?
Didn't it get reported not too long ago that they were looking at something in Texas?
There was a report from Fightful that they were looking at a big event for Texas. But yeah, that would be, I guess that's the idea, is like all in is like, we used to have this discussion on like the big marquee event. Now you clearly have all in is your signature event of the year. Do you try and do Wembley again, or do you go somewhere else? Because I think that is, now you are establishing that as the brand name event each year for your company that you can do a stadium on based on the name.
I think you do try to keep all in London. Like my thing is, You need to figure out this all out situation, because like you can't keep doing this every year like this. So this year we have, I think, what we have, a 1 week gap opposed to.
Yeah, they're taking Labor Day off. And all right. So it's 2 weeks between, which is still a quick turnaround. Yeah,
you kind of, because I'm sure that there are some ideas being tossed around for all out, but they're moving full speed and charging towards all in. So then you have a very quick turnaround to fill out what I'm assuming is going to be like a 9-match card, 10-match card, including the 0 hour matches. So, and then on top of that, like I'm wondering, like I want to actually ask you this. So with WrestleMania being in Vegas next year, do you think the market in Vegas kind of will be like oversaturated by the time they get the double? Because what's that? Mania is April 7th, April 8th. So like, you know what I'm saying? The Vegas. That's going to be a kind of tapped into market. Do you think
it's like 6 weeks pretty much weeks? Yeah.
Yeah. 5-6 weeks. Do you think they would consider moving Double or Nothing to like another place? Like, I mean, when I think of like markets that AEW is always like hot for, like, dude, Texas is like crazy for AEW. So like, maybe you consider just this 1 year taking a break from Las Vegas, considering that, you know what I'm saying? That market is about to be tackled for that couple of weeks leading up to WrestleMania.
I think minimum one pay-per-view per year in the Baltimore, Washington area. So we can send you, that would be the choice. That's where you go.
I like your thinking, man. See,
that's it.
That's what I call a post wrestling man right there. There you go. That's thinking it. About everybody else. Look at that.
Well, the last hour of the show is dedicated to Blood and Guts, but first we got a video, which was narrated by Dean Malenko. That was Dean Malenko. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Listen, if they had not put up, they put up the text that it was narrated by Dean Malenko. I wouldn't have known.
I did not notice that. I didn't notice the text part. I didn't notice that.
It was there right at the beginning. It was brief, but
okay.
His sound, like with the gravelly voice that he has now, he sounds so much like Freddie Blassie. And I thought like, this should be their voiceover guy for like a big video package that they do every now and then. I thought it was like a very like distinct voice that they had, but to me it just sounded so much like when Blassie would do some of those WWF video packages.
You want to know who I thought? I thought that was like somebody from Turner, that they like a professional voice actor that they found like because of the connection and stuff. Like, I did not know that was Dean. I missed that opening graphic. I didn't see it.
Yeah. So that was in fact Dean Malenko that they had to do.
Shout out to Dean, man. Like I know JR had said he had surgery early this year. Like I know the verbiage he used was like brain surgery or something like, but it was like
he's battling like Parkinson's, right?
Yeah. So you shout out to Dean, man.
So the show, it's your war game setup where we would get one participant from each side, and then the match would begin once all 10 had joined in. So we'll go through some of the highlights here. Jack Perry and Darby Allin started this off, and they went the entire duration here. This would be kind of right up until our closing sequence that the focus would be on Jack Perry and Darby Allin and setting up their match for All In. But I mean, with each entrant, we just got more and more weapons introduced. These two, they fought into the crowd. Perry used a trash can and just controlled right until the end of the interval. Nick Jackson is next, and he brings out the first of several metal suitcases that would be introduced. And so they have the man advantage until Mark Briscoe comes in. He introduces a ladder, and that's when there's a swanton by Briscoe onto the ladder on top of Nick. Matt Jackson is next, bringing out another suitcase, and Mark Briscoe in your office pool was the first to bleed, but definitely not the last. Anthony Bowens comes out sixth, and this is where we start to escalate things. Darby uses a skateboard with tacks into the arm of Matt Jackson as they're trying to take these tacks out of the arm. And then Bowens starts stabbing Jack Perry with scissors, including putting the scissors in the mouth, and the place just goes nuts for this spot that I want to believe if these This would have killed a man. He was just like blunt stabbing to the head, like forcefully. But anyway, I guess that opened up Jack Perry.
Definitely did. He got his mouth scissored. There you
That's
go.
It.
Verbiage.
Kazuchika Okada is out seventh.
Did you see the Rainmaker Drive?
Comes out with the Rainmaker Drive sign. Okada was not doing any blood. He probably got a rundown of this match. He's like, yeah, I'm going to do my thing in this match, and you guys just work around me. That kind of felt like the vibe here for Okada. Nick and Perry are bleeding here, and then we get a big F the Young Bucks chant, and they're just like berating the fans. Max Caster is eighth, and he comes out with the microphone, and you think he's going to do a rap, but instead he uses it as a weapon, and he brings out a barbed wire board, and it ends up where they make a barbed wire sandwich with Bowens in between the boards and Nick hitting a swan dive off the top. Okada brings out the bag of tacks, which they put into Max's mouth as the Bucks super kick him. And then ninth is supposed to be Hangman Page, but he does not come out when his music plays. So Team AEW doesn't have to fight with the man disadvantage. And then 10th is Swerve. He comes out, and as he's walking down the aisle, Page comes from behind and wallops him from behind with this chair shot to the back of the head, and he handcuffs Swerve to the cage. And the idea is he only accepted this spot by the Elite so he could get his hands on Swerve. So once he has done his damage, he doesn't have any incentive to get involved in the match. So the Young Bucks threaten to fire Hangman if he doesn't join in. So Page reluctantly enters the match, and we get the blood and guts portion beginning. But then
I was going to say, I was hoping when Hangman didn't come out, I was hoping that David was going to go the route of like him just ambushing Swerve when he, because it just made sense story. Like he literally said that he doesn't care about the Elite, like literally said that to him. So it would only make sense that the only reason he accepted this position was so he could finally get his hands on Swerve, did it. And like when I saw him handcuff Swerve to the cage, the first thing that came to my mind was, we have a main event world title match in 4 weeks. We are going to have minimal, like this, we're going to shine our world champion in this match, but we're not going to take these, like him being in there the full time, like especially with this time gap that we have with the main event against Danielson happening in 4 weeks. Like honestly, I would have did the exact same thing. I wouldn't have took that chance. I mean, even though, you know what I'm saying, anything can happen at any moment, but like you kind of, you know, you got to protect this thing that you got coming up real soon.
Yeah, I will say it does feel like if you were just coming out of this show alone and I was to just ask you, what is the main event of All In? You would definitely assume it is Swerve and Hangman coming out of this, which, as many people have suggested, could be like you could definitely come back at All Out with this match. Like, it's there for you.
That's too early, man.
Yeah, it might be, but they need something big to come back on pay-per-view like 2 weeks later. So
they do. Like that's the issue. Like you need something to come back and build it. Because like I was thinking about, so like I know we're gonna talk about it, but like do you remember that part? I'm pretty sure you're gonna run over. Do you remember that part during the match when Swerve and Hangman were on opposite sides of the ring, and then Darby was in the middle between them? Like, maybe I'm just reading into it, but I think that was done on purpose so it could show that Darby is going to be the gap before Swerve and Hangman go at it. Like, I think that, like, I was thinking maybe they do it at All Out. Like, maybe that's the route you go, but I was thinking more so Darby. And I'm operating under the assumption that Swerve is going to beat Danielson at All In, because I just don't think Danielson wants to be world champion. Like, I mean, unless Tony Khan is going to force him to. But like I was thinking maybe we get Swerve and Darby at the Tacoma Dome for Wrestle Dream, both of them from Washington. Like, I think that'd be a real solid main event. But I mean, like you said, you need something for this All Out show to come back off of. And I'm thinking that we're going to get Swerve Hangman at Full Gear 2024. That's going to be the main event to follow up from the match they had last year. So I mean, it's that All Out pay-per-view, man. Like it's too close.
All right. I'm going to park this. And for those watching, I am about to reveal a spoiler from Rampage. I am about to reveal a spoiler from Rampage. You can hit fast forward by about 30 seconds and we will end this conversation. But it will be Darby Allin who wins Royal Rampage on Friday. So he gets the title match at Grand Slam. So in a roundabout way, Andrew, you kind of like put all the pieces together there.
So who gets the title match? I mean, is it going to be a title match at All Out?
Well, that's the question. Yeah, you have to do some kind of title match there. But then, so instead of Darby being the go-between, he is he gets the Grand Slam match, which
I mean, that's good.
That's like your
when is
that's
Wrestle Dream is 2024. What's that? That's October 12th.
Yeah, that's not that far after Grand Slam. Not. Like they have a lot of big shows in that stretch. Like from All In, All Out, Grand Slam, and then Wrestle Dream. Like that's some really quick turnarounds that they have. And you need big matches on all of those. Plus like your TVs that you gotta fill in too. So it's a lot. There's a lot going on for AEW in this period. But it's like they do have the guys that they can facilitate like a lot of these big shows. But the All Out, I think that's a, we'll see how they do it year two versus last year when they tried this. But getting back to the match with Swerve, he's all locked up against the cage. So who is here to save the day? It's Double J. He comes down here in Nashville and Brandon Cutler is out to try and stop him. So then the other savior, the other big muscle joining Jeff Jarrett, it's Billy Gunn. He comes out, your 1999 King of the Ring winner, takes out Cutler, and then he takes a guitar shot. Cutler does. And then the announcers explain they have a key and they're going to unlock Swerve. And time stands still. This key, whatever it is, it's not opening. Prince Nana comes down with bolt cutters, and then the cameras, they just cut away because this is taking too long. We cut back. Swerve is now free. Somehow he got out of this. So that was Jeff Jarrett. He certainly had his moments on this episode. And Swerve just starts. This match like escalates. As Swerve enters this, he is just laying out everybody. He stares down Hangman in the opposite ring, and this place goes wild. And they start going at it. They meet in the middle. Then Darby stops Hangman with a code red, and the Bucks open one of the suitcases. They have staple guns, and they take turns stapling Swerve, who goes down and then starts laughing it off. And he fights back and starts stapling them, including Okada's middle finger that he raises. Crowd loved this spot with the staple guns, and the Buckshot misses Swerve, and Hangman nails Okada by mistake. So Swerve staples Hangman's jaw and hits the house call while the Bucks set up a stack of tables on the floor, which ends up with Anthony Bowens being sent off the side of the cage through the tables. We didn't get a crazy Sammy Guevara bump off the top, but this was the high fall through the table spot. That took Bowens out of the match. Briscoe then hits Jay Drillers all around. Everyone's going wild for him. Then Darby. This guy, by the way, has been in this match like 45 minutes at this point. He scales the top of this roof and just like shimmies across into a coffin drop onto Jack Perry. This was nuts this late in the match.
I say the monkey bars coffin drop. That's crazy, man.
This like, was wild.
And the way he landed, like it looked like his lower back hit Jack, but like the back of his head, like he like tilted. I was like, oh my God, man.
So Max opens up the other suitcase and it's got handcuffs and they proceed to cuff everybody up, including Jack Perry, who is now handcuffed to the fence with both his arms trapped. And they start attacking with kendo stick shots. And then this was one spot. This was totally unneeded in this match. There was enough violence. There was enough drama for the end. Mark Briscoe just wallops Jack Perry straight in the head with this chair. Dude, like this wasn't even the finish. This was like so unnecessary. This chair shot. This was nasty. This chair shot, dude.
They had Jack like handcuffed in this little pose that he does, that thing. And like when I saw that, I was like, Jesus, I know that hurt, bro. I know he's probably pissed.
He just took this chair shot like right on the top of the head. And Darby asks him if he quits, and he says no. So Darby says, well, we're gonna party. And he goes and he brings out a thing of gasoline to pour over Jack Perry and threatens to light his ass on fire. Now, somewhere there was some miscommunication here because the announcers start to talk about, well, we've seen him with that flamethrower. We've seen him bring the flamethrower out before. Well, Darby does not have the flamethrower tonight. Instead, he has one of those lighters that you would like light a kid's candle for their birthday cake for. And he's got it's just like the smallest, the furthest thing from a flamethrower as he's threatening to light Jack Perry on fire. And Matt Jackson is the one he talks Darby out of it by promising him a TNT title match at All In, but that's not enough. Darby wants him to quit and Matt Jackson quits on behalf of the team. And notably, it's Tony Schiavone that emphasizes Jack Perry never quit. It was Matt Jackson that quit. But coming out of this, you got the all-in TNT title match set up and team AEW prevails. And that's how they went off the air with. How did you feel this Blood and Guts, how it came off and in comparison to other ones?
You want to know what? It was so good. I was just about to ask you the same thing. I think that this year's Blood and Guts smashes the one they did last year. Like I did not enjoy the one last year. Like I know they had talked about it. I think, the Young Bucks in the interview, it was like some time issues, miscommunication issues that like plagued that match. So, and I didn't enjoy it at all. But this one, very much probably I think my second favorite, because I did like the one in 2022 when it was Kingston and them versus JAS. I think that was that 2021.
Where Jericho takes the fall at the end.
Yeah. I really like that one. So, but this is probably my second favorite Blood and Guts match that they've done.
I did like kind of the layout of this one that in years past, I remember, and I think last year especially stood out to me was if you're watching like picture in picture, like they would have entrances during breaks. They would have like different spots. I felt this one, I don't think any of the entrances, like they weren't always like the exact same time intervals, but they timed it with when they were on the air that it just seemed like it flowed a lot better. I thought like, the match went by well. It's kind of like the nonstop like weapon stuff. It's not always my cup of tea, and I can see some people like it's just like it's a lot of like the weapon spots. But like that audience, I just felt like I thought Swerve really like upped the intensity when he added and whenever they did the crazy spots. Like this Nashville crowd went nuts for the scissors spot. They went nuts for like the J Drillers when Swerve got involved with the staples. So it's like this was working for this crowd. And then the ending, I mean, it's tough to argue with arguing that you're going to set a man on fire. So you've kind of like brought it to as dramatic a spot as you can. I mean, you're going to eventually they're going to have to torch. They did light people on fire.
Like he did torch them.
We've been there. So I thought for what it was, like I thought it was like a well laid out match that I didn't think this was like the best built up Blood and Guts, but I would state the match like it delivered what. they had promised. And they've set the bar very high for these style of like violent AEW matches.
You want to know what this reminds me of? Like, this is like how, you know, how, like every year going into WrestleMania, like most of some of like the women's matches, it's always like a lackluster build, and then the match ends up being great. Like that's kind of like what this reminds me of. Like, it was, the build wasn't bad, but I just didn't think, I found it interesting. And I kept finding myself leaning into the joke that like the people that was on the Elite are like more team AEW. So the dude's been there since day one. Like they're kind of like that.
Matt and Nick, Team Elite, they come out with their briefcases with like these big AEW logos on the side of them. I mean, these guys are, I don't know.
But do you feel like these type of matches, like especially of course these blood and guts matches, but do you think they're better when there are like multiple stories happening opposed to it just being like a car crash? Like, cause I feel like last year's, it was just like that. I still look back very badly on that. I did not enjoy it at all, but I feel like with this one, when you have like these like interweaving stories between multiple individuals that you can clearly see is going to play out.
That's always my preference. And they did, like, they introduced a lot here. Like the Hangman Swerve program, like I felt they did a really good job with it tonight. And coming out of it, you want to see that match that much more after tonight. Like they really pushed that hard. It's only a question of like where and when are they going to do that.
If you had to guess, like, I know you say All Out, but like, do you think they try to hold that off? Like, or do you think they can hold that off until November? Or do you think like at some point, like, you got to blow this thing off, like Wrestle Dream or All Out? Like, cause I mean, that's, I'm assuming they're going to say, like, I do not think that's happening on a TV special. That's not happening on Dynamite. Like, that is going to be pay-per-view main event. And the next three ones are, we have the All Out, we have Wrestle Dream, and we have, Full Gear. I'm pretty certain they're not going to wait till World's End to do that match. But like, where would you mark that?
If you're asking me today, I think All Out would be my target for it.
Okay.
It feels really hot at the moment. I'm not saying they can't sustain it longer. I guess it's just to me, it's like, what match can you do on 2 weeks' notice? And that's one that I think it feels like a really big match that they're going to hold off on this summer. And we'll see what involvement Hangman has for All In. Does he even have a match at All In? Something to set that up and keep that hot. Yeah. There's that potential. And they even teased it tonight with the Buckshot, spot.
That's
possible too.
I know it's hard to kind of predict considering like the severity of his like health, but like, do you expect Omega back before? At All In, because I mean I know his injury and it, what he was dealing with was like damn near, like I know it could have been very, very serious, so I'm pretty sure you want to take your time with that.
Unless there's some like miracle recovery, right. I'm not expecting him to wrestle. What would be cool is like if he could do the travel and stuff, that he's like some, like that year that Shibata came out at the G1. Not to say this is like the same level, but Omega just comes out unannounced and he comes out, like that crowd will go wild for him. And if he can give some kind of update there, or I'm shooting to return, and maybe even has like a target or some kind of update, it'd be cool to get him on the show as just an unannounced surprise to come out and appear.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
There you go. That was the Blood and Guts edition of Dynamite. I thought, you know, another, like, this has been a really good run of Dynamites of late, and I think this continued that as well. And now we can look ahead to everyone that will be hyper-focused on the number that comes out on Thursday afternoon to determine what the state of AEW is. Are they going to live or die based off of this week's number? We will find out. But I thought overall, like, it was a pretty entertaining show, and it was not contained to just Blood and Guts. Like, I thought the first hour was pretty solid hour in and of itself, including Andrew's match of the year contender in Jericho, Minoru Suzuki.
I think they got a lot done within that first hour. So yeah, it was like some, especially with the arrival of Camille, her pairing her with Mercedes and stuff like that. I'm staying with the thought that I think that they're setting up for Jamie Hayter's return at Wembley. So yeah, I'm only imagine the pop that she's gonna get there. So
it's wild that it's been a year that she's been out.
What was that, Double or Nothing last time she wrestled? 2023.
It was like, it was around that. Did she do Forbidden Door last year? I'm really bad at remembering this off the top of my head, but yeah, it was so, I mean, we're talking, yeah, that's 13 months.
What was her injury? Because like I've like read it was, but I never got like I don't think I ever read like any like specific like what happened to her.
I want to say like back, wasn't it the at least yeah, that was initially
remember,
was
yeah.
But I mean,
I remember it being like people saying it was a back injury, but like I was trying to figure out like what exactly happened.
I'm sure there's going to be like a whole like explanation of like what happened. Like it's obviously super serious when you're talking a year, and she was red hot at that time too, going into Wembley last year. But there you go. That was the show, everybody, and we are just going to go through a few pieces of feedback here. If you do want to send in any super chats here for the youngest in charge, he'll be taking some.
Hey John, that youngest in charge label, man. Like I'm about to turn 28 on the 19th. Like I don't know how much longer I can keep holding on to that nickname, bro.
You and me both. You got a few years to catch up to me, so. On the road, this is from Easy Attack. We thank you very much for the super chat. On the road right now, just wanted to show some love, Chris Ely. Oh, well, thank you,
Chris.
Busy man. He's out there. This has got to be like one of the busiest weeks of his life.
Yeah, with me and Nate was and Ray was joking. We was at Chris was on KTLA and making all the local media news outlets and stuff like that. He was doing some Zoom calls, but yeah, Chris is very busy right now, man. Very busy.
And Jared Black sends in a super chat. Darby waffled Jack Perry with that chair shot. Wow. Yes, we talked about the chair shot. I think one spot I could have done without in that main event segment, as could Jack Perry as well. But a few pieces here. Andrew from Cape Breton writes in, it seemed like they loaded the back half of the show, as I don't think Blood and Guts was competing against Joe Biden. We did get a bit of a rah-rah America speech, though. I kind of like that idea going into All In with the foreign American heel. I think stuff like that can work sometimes, as it did with Ospreay being anti-Canadian. But the most important match of the night was Blood and Guts. The build was underwhelming compared to prior years, with all the team members set in stone long before those matches. The match also started a bit slow compared to years past, but it picked up later, especially with Anthony Bowens. I was hoping he would be the man starting the match, as I see him getting a singles run in the future. But after he did his Sid impression to the crowd's horror, that seemed to be the right decision. I also love the our fans are just relentless here. I also love the Swerve Hangman spot during the match, and it seemed like they want to beef up All Out after last year's poor number. They could make All Out almost like a night two of WrestleMania type of show.
That's a good idea.
What is your thought towards All In? Do you think it's a given that Swerve and Danielson, you put that on last? Is there any chance you put Ospreay and MJF in that spot?
I'm not having a main event over that world title match. You got to close with that. I think you got to close with that. I mean, I don't see the issue with Swerve and MJF and Ospreay, you know, being second from last. Like, I mean, they did it at Double Nothing, mm-hmm. and they built it as a triple main event. Just have it built as a double main event.
I think they'll probably promote. I think people would take like the Toni Storm, Mariah May, or even Mercedes and Baker. Like they're they've got like a really strong like those programs are all very strong heading into the show, and you got a month to go. Muggin, the international title has been having an identity crisis, and MJF rechristening it as the American title was a choice. Camille finally debuted as Mercy's hired muscle. Took him long enough. Ultimately, this was a one-match show as Blood and Guts came through like a hurricane of blood, staples, and potential immolation. It was laid out pretty well with the Swerve Hangman entries elevating the tail end of it. I always enjoy Muggin's written feedback because it could also be like a movie trailer on top of a feedback to a wrestling show.
Shout out to Mugg. He was in the NWA chat for a little bit. I think he stayed the whole show, I think. So shout out to him. Hey, I saw somebody I mentioned just now, Anthony Bowen. So I obviously, you know, we're going to get the Bucks in the claim match. But like I know FTR has said that their road to the AEW tag titles is stopping at All In. So I'm assuming they're going to be challenging for the titles. Like how do you... Where do you prioritize those two teams in terms of going to All In, and do you just save one for All Out? Because I mean, it seems like the claim they have been waiting for this title match for quite some time, so I would think they are first priority. But I mean, you literally just had FTR like essentially promise that they're going to be challenging for the tag titles at the next pay per view.
Yeah, it really feels as though they're going to redo FTR and the Bucks at All In. I can't imagine they're going to hold off on the Acclaimed longer than that. Like, does that just because it almost feels at this point like I mean, you could do it as just a TV match, I guess, at this point. But man, they've built this up to be like a significant title match just because it's been almost a month since they won that title eliminator. Yeah, it would seem like they put a lot of work if this is just going to be a TV title defense. But the TVs are very important at the moment that they put these big matches on TV. Could see that potentially being something. That was the other thing is like each week they've had something big to have ready for the next week. And this was one where you are coming out of it and we got no announcements for Dynamite next week.
Yeah, I'm patiently awaiting for a Thursday night or
we're going to get that
night.
Tony Khan graphic drop at 3 in the morning. Bryan Danielson versus a bear.
Oh, my goodness, man.
Last one here is Brian from New Jersey. He says he enjoyed the Matt Camp interview. Thank you very much, Brian. It was nice he wasn't restricted by an NDA. Yes, we always appreciate when people come on. They don't have NDAs. He said, I'll be imposing an NDA on myself, though, when I see Deadpool and Wolverine on Thursday night. Okay. As for tonight, an enjoyable Dynamite that was plenty bloody and gutsy. I thought this year's match had a more focused story than last year's throughout, with the Swerve Hangman feud reigniting before Darby attempted to ignite Jack Perry again. Nice to see this match clearly set up future ones and issues. Really hoping the chair to Jack's head was gimmicked. I don't know about that. Solid matches outside of that. The biggest stuff on the rest of the card was another hot MJF Ospreay segment, Camille appearing as the Diesel to Mercedes Shawn Michaels, and the comically bad acting of Alex Marvez. Poor Alex Marvez gets his car hijacked and got sent on parking lot duty for an interview with Will Ospreay.
That's like now that I'm thinking of, like, I'm like fully thinking about that segment, like comically bad acting is kind of that's like kind of on point. Like now that I'm thinking about it, but yeah. Shout out to Alex Marvez, man. He tried. Hey, real quick, just on Danielson, right? So, I'm assuming I think he's going to lose it all in. What is this final match as a full time in ring performer? And he's like said in the interview that that you know it's going to be probably at the Wrestle Dream show. And I like think in that same interview, he said his contract was coming up even before All In. So that's an interesting little note to think about. But like, what is this final match as a full-time wrestler for Bryan Danielson? Like, who is that person?
So,
and is it Nigel McGuinness?
Historically, I've always used Bryan Danielson as one of those examples that this guy cannot help himself but be truthful. I take a lot of what he's putting out there with like a grain of salt at the moment. Like, yeah, okay. It all logically makes sense to me that Wrestle Dream would be his like last match before at least he's taking away like from part-time wrestling. No one is believing this is it for him. But I could see him playing with that too.
Oh, part-time. Yeah, my bad.
But yeah, I would state that I think like you have some options here of where you can go. And just given that it's Danielson, I tend to go, avoid like what's like the obvious thing, because Danielson, I think, always wants to go towards like the thing you're not thinking about. Like I could see his last opponent being someone like we're not even thinking about, potentially.
Chris Hero.
Like, yes, like something crazy like that. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, I'm calling out the one man who's going to settle this whole international divide. Michael Oku, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I if you were to get into his head about like who he wants to have these last matches with, I mean, let's get Daniel Makabe on one of these shows. I mean, there you go.
There you go. Look at that.
And he'll come out for one match. He'll come out of retirement for.
And he just confirmed that to you in his interview. Did he not?
That is
in you guys' interview. There you go. Like, I'm even thinking about like, if Zach does win the, Zack Sabre Jr., if he does win the G1, I can see him beating Naito at Wrestle Kingdom and then the next day defending against Danielson in the tiebreaker at Wrestle Dynasty. See that?
Oh, the January 5th show.
Uh-huh.
I could see that happening. Totally. Yeah.
I mean, I think it'd be tough, like the back-to-back, like big time match, but I think Zack could do it. I think he could do it.
Oh, I think absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like like if Danielson would be willing to go to that, like that would be a good place to do this. And I'm very curious with that January 5th show, if this is going to sort of be a like New Japan promoted event, or is AEW going to promote it on their end? like a pay-per-view for them? Or is this going to be just, we'll supply talent, but we're not going to really be pushing this and programs on our television? Because I'm sure for New Japan, like, they are very, very heavily push it. Like, they want tourists coming over for that week in Japan. And a big part of that is, you know, getting that AEW push on television and putting some, not just big matches together, but also getting some, like, build up on television for it.
I'm about to say, because I'm looking at the calendar now, and I know at the end of the year, they always have those, like, Road to Tokyo Dome shows at Korakuen. Yeah. So I would assume that you would want some of the ROH, AEW, CMLL, Stardom talent, like, to be, you know what I'm saying, available to some type of build to that, in addition to what's going to come at Wrestle Kingdom or, you know, at Wrestle Dynasty. So, and then Dynamite, they have the show on the first of that week. So, like, that's a...
And they've got the pay-per-view, right, a few days before. Yeah.
Well, World's End. Yeah, that's World's End was that on the 29th. So that's like Jesus Christ, man. That's tough.
So it's like, even if they get, like... So that kind of answers my question right there. Like, you've got that pay-per-view to build towards. Like, it's like we've established it's very tough for them to build two shows at once. That January 5th show, it would be very hard for them to be plugging that super hard when you've got a pay-per-view to sell like 6 days earlier.
Yeah, I know. How about saying, then you're going to have I'm assuming it will be Okada's return to some type of like New Japan. Like, I would honestly have him wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom. In addition to working Wrestle Dynasty, is to be like a big whole thing. See that again. So, yeah, but that's a lot right there. You got the World's End, you got Dynamite, you got
Andrew. This is the rest of your life, okay? It's figuring out how to keep up with pro wrestling, okay? That's it. Your life is a calendar, and it's figuring out how little of my life I will have left after I finish watching pro wrestling. That's it, and it will never end. It will just continue to multiply week by week, month by month. Pay-per-view by pay-per-view. But Andrew, we definitely have to do these more often. It's always great catching up with you, chatting a bit of professional wrestling. And this comes after I listened to, I'm not finished the show, but I'm in the final 90 minutes of the show. So that means I've already listened to 3.5 hours of you since Sunday already.
You want to know what, like, it was funny because last month, I think we had it was a 4 hours. Three hours and 59 minutes, or it was almost.
You got so cocky. You texted me during the show that we're gonna have this one in at like 3 hours, and it turned out to be you guys went like another 90.
Yeah, man. So appreciate everybody listening to the NWA podcast, man. Whenever you get through, I know Brandon from New Jersey that came in the chat and said this is gonna be nice for my drive. On I think today is his drive. So there you go. Hope Brandon's enjoying the show.
Listen, people demand it. People enjoy the. It's eventually just going to turn into the late night show into the morning show on a Monday morning. One day it'll happen.
You want to know how I always know that we've gone like just a tad over the minute is when Martin Bushby pops in the chat. And that lets me know that Martin is about to get up and go to work, and we're still going. That lets me know that. We need to put a button on this thing because it's 1 a.m. usually when that happens.
Yeah, usually when Two Ray Ray has hit his limit, it's when you start to do a AEW main event breakdown of Swerve and Will Ospreay. We got to put together like the top 10 moments at the end of the year. I'm already going to request a way that you guys do your show the Sunday after the election. I think it's a must.
I think that has to happen as well. Like when we talk about like top moments, what Ray did that podcast episode is some of the greatest audio I've ever heard in my life. Like it was peak Ray Williams right there, ladies and gentlemen. Greatness.
Yeah, that was his Omos moment. The Chris that might have been the moment of 2023 was Chris versus Omos. But guys, if you have not, if you are not converted, become a listener of the NWA podcast. It's fantastic. I love listening to these guys on a monthly basis, and you can catch all of Andrew's great work. This dude does not sleep. Look what he was pumping out on Tuesday, coming back for more Wednesday, and then staying up with me to chat about Dynamite. He is the Iron Man here at Post Wrestling, the youngest in charge, even at the ripe old age of 28 years old. Dude was born in 96. You're still the youngest in charge, Andrew. You've got that on hold.
barely. I'm telling you, every time I think about it, I feel like my bones start creaking, man. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I can't be about to be 28 years old. But you know what? In all seriousness, though, like I joke about it. I like to make fun about, you know, but I feel very grateful, man. I got to see 27 great years in this lifetime, man. I'm very grateful. It's very cool to know that I'm getting older. You know what I'm saying? Very cool.
The best is yet to come, Andrew. And of course, Andrew Thompson interviews on YouTube, and you can get your Andrew Thompson merchandise, chopped-tees.com. You know what? I got the whole – Andrew sent me a whole list. He's like, listen, you better work all of this stuff in, okay? This is my rate, okay? I got them all checked off here.
I'm about to say, go get the Kings of Sport merchandise, man, the Post Wrestling merchandise. I saw people in Toronto was rocking the full set, the two-piece.
Oh, yeah.
The two-piece blue set.
We had the button-up shirt then, sighting.
We need you and Wade rocking that for a podcast episode. Like, y'all just pop out and around the raw. With the-
One day. The great Dickie Bird will hook us up.
Shout out to Dickie Bird.
I need
Bird,
some connections. I don't get any of this merchandise. They leave it all away from me. I don't know people. I need to.
Bro, you want to know what? Let me say this about Dickie and his the chopped tees thing. Bro, I do not know how he gets this merch out so fast from Australia. Like, I BS you not. Like, you will order this stuff and it'll be here in like 3 days. Like, I don't know how he does it or what type of connections he has, but yeah, go get the Kings of Sport NWA Post Wrestling. You get this.
Buy it all. Buy it all. Check out the pillars. Yes, that is right. All right. Well, thanks everyone for staying up with us. We appreciate all of your support here at Post Wrestling. And again, Thursday, I'm going to have a show with Eric Marcotte going through the Tuesday and Thursday G1 shows. Wei Ting will be up with Rich Fan, who is Toronto bound this weekend. I'm going to be having dinner with Rich Fan this weekend. Hey. And WH Park. Can you believe it? They will be up with MCU later, chatting Deadpool 2. And then Wei and I reunite Friday night for Rewind a SmackDown. Follow the man. AD Thompson _ make sure you emphasize _ Paul. Oh, whoops. That was the personal note from Andrew. We thank you all for joining us. Have a great night.